Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins. In today's episode, we're going to talk about a question that James sent in talking about distance wedges and how to control yardages with your wedges. You know, ultimately, I think this is a super important topic for golfers. We need to be able to not only create speed, but we got to be able to control speed and control the distance of our golf ball. So
I don't always hit my lob wedge 100 yards, but when I do, it's from a greenside bunker.
That's right.
We're not talking about how far you can hit your wedges.
Not ideal,
maxing it out. We're talking about controlling the distance of your
wedges. We got to control it.
That's what we mean by distance wedge. It has other names. It has feel wedges, scoring wedges, whatever. But we're
finesse wedges, however.
How do you hit your 60-degree club? 81 yards, 74 yards, 58 yards, whatever. We're talking about that.
And so obviously pretty popular to talk about a clock system, right? And being able to control those pieces. But I think I just want to hear from everybody today on what do you teach a system? How do you help people control distances when it comes to their wedges? So Eric, what would you say is sort of your go-to?
I will start by saying that I used to fairly religiously teach kind of a clock system. It wasn't always clocks. By clock system, I mean, you might think wrists or hands to belt height. You might not call that literally 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11. You might not literally think of it as a clock. You might think of it as one third, two thirds full positions, basically stopping at a position and hitting the ball from there. And the intent is to accelerate at the same rate. And so if you accelerate over a shorter distance, you're going to reach a lower speed at the ball and hit the ball a shorter distance. Whereas if you make a bigger swing, you have longer to accelerate, you'll reach a higher speed at the ball. And so with the same intent on the downswing to kind of accelerate at the same rate, you arrive at the ball at predictable speeds, and thus the ball goes predictable distances. Mm-hmm. So that's the clock system. I used to teach that fairly religiously, and I get that people, still about 85 or 90% of people, that resonates the best with them, yep. I think. You guys might have different percentages, but the vast majority for you, that still makes sense to them. Again, whatever they call the stopping points, so long as they're far enough apart that their yardage gaps are not 4 yards, I don't care. Make them 10 or 15 yards,
yeah,
at least. But I listened to Scott Hamilton talk about it and some other people. And John Daly has always had like a ridiculously long backswing, even when he's hitting a 45-yard shot.
Right.
Okay, that he would call a pitch or a distance wedge or a 60-yard shot, even though he can hit his lob wedge 100 yards. When he hit it 58 yards, it would be still a full-length backswing draped down his back.
Yeah.
He's controlling the speed at the ball. And ultimately, that's what's important. So I've started to adapt and allow people to kind of find their own way. The way I've done that lately is borrowed from Scott Hamilton, where he has his college and tour players generate a 60-mile-an-hour swing as like their mid-level swing. With a 60-degree club, the smash factor should be about 1, so the ball leaves at about 60 miles an hour. So we have a 60-degree club, 60 miles an hour of club head speed, 60 miles an hour of ball speed, 1.0 smash, and the ball goes about 60 yards. So there's a lot of 60s in there. If you have a 58, it doesn't go 58 yards. It goes a little farther than 60 yards. That's how the loft works. If you can generate a 60-mile-an-hour swing and send your lob wedge 60 yards, that's kind of your middle distance. And then you generate, if you have a 54 as your next club, or 56, 52, whatever they are, it doesn't matter, any of your wedges, find what makes you swing them at 60 miles per hour. Make that your middle one. Then you go up to 72 or 75 or 69 or whatever creates your gap. And then you go down about the same amount. And then that's your system. Just whatever way you can generate a speed,
yep.
Because that's the ultimate goal of the clock system.
Absolutely.
To control the speed at which we hit the ball. But some players make almost the same swing and then just feel the speed coming down. I don't know how better to describe it.
Yep.
Some players, we can all probably make a shorter backswing than we know we should and then accelerate more and hit the ball a little bit farther, or make a long backswing and then slow down the downswing. We can all do that as good players, but some people actually make that how they hit it. They make the same swing and vary the speed of the swing. Jason, what do you find?
Yeah, I'm almost sort of in the middle of those. So I have a standard like clock system, but I have a baseline from that. This is where I would advocate a launch monitor. And again, it doesn't have to be an expensive launch monitor, but you should have like a PRGR or the Stack system, or I'm losing a couple of the more budget friendly ones, but anything in there that you're going to get to be able to give yourself a baseline. And I would use this before you go out to play that day, right? Because what your 60 mile per hour baseline is today might feel like a 65, right? But if you, again, you don't calibrate yourself to that, you're going to struggle for the first three or four holes, which might have been great birdie opportunities for you. But yes, 100%, I agree. And so like, you should have a system. You should be able to calibrate that system, which is the most important, because again, as Eric said, how you bring the speed into that. And then of course, you got to have consistent strike, because you might bring the same swing 60 miles per hour into the ball, but then you hit it off the toe one shot, you hit it high off the face on the next. And then the third one, you hit it dead in the middle. And now you've got three completely different yardages and you're wondering, you're scratching your head, why did one fall into the bunker short? One flew over the back of the green. Make sure your strike's good. And then from there, absolutely find whatever system that you need to, that creates at least a, you know, vanilla bracket system that's like, all right, I need to know what my carry number is, which is the most important, by the way. It's not your total number. Your carry number is the one that you need to really know down, because here's a tip for a lot of you golfers too, is once you hit your first or second wedge shot into the green, find your pitch mark, which you should be fixing anyways, and step that out, because now you're going to know what your roll is for the rest of the day. The amount of times that I've seen golfers play and they hit the same shot, and they constantly keep coming up short because the greens are softer. They're more receptive today than they were 2 days ago or a week ago or whatever, because, you know, whatever, you know, rained. All of a sudden now they need to be actually hitting their, you know, 65 yard carry shot, but they just for the entire round hit that because they, you know, they know, oh, it just goes this, like, no, here's a tip for you, step it out. And then therefore you can start hitting those wedge shots closer to the hole.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've had golfers come to me and say, well, coach, my full lob wedge goes, or full meaning three quarter, right? Because no, I never want people to make a full swing with a wedge. It just spins and gets up in the air and it's a little bit uncontrollable. But their largest lob wedge might be the same carry yardage as their roughly half pitching wedge or something like that. The carry yardage might be the same on those. And they're like, so what am I doing wrong? I don't have good gaps. I'm like, no, you have good gaps.
Bang on.
If you have a pin that is in the front of the green at that lob wedge yardage, then you hit your lob wedge. If you have a pin that's 10 or 12 yards past that yardage in the back of the green, then you hit your pitching wedge, because it hits, comes in, lands at a shallower angle, chases and rolls out a little bit more than the lob wedge that comes in at a sharper angle down to the ground. So your gaps can still be, as long as each club is gapped well, you don't need gaps in all your wedges, because you have a gap in landing angle and trajectory.
Yes.
And that allows you to get at different pins, even though you have the same carry yardage.
Yeah. I'll sort of tell everybody, not every 60 yard shot is equal. You know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to control the speed of the ball with the launch of the ball with different clubs, because not every 60 yard shot is going to be equal. And obviously, if I'm trying to hit it higher, I need a little bit more speed because that ball is going up and not as far out. If I'm, you know, I'm trying to hit it a little bit lower, I don't need as much, to your point, right? And that's going to run. And I think that by itself starts to get people thinking, you know, a little bit differently about what they're actually trying to do, you know. And I think it's very common for me to see, if you sort of teach a player how to hit, let's just say, a mid-flighted wedge, then they try to hit every single wedge shot mid-flighted when they're on the golf course. When, you know, they have a front pin, they have a middle pin, they have a back pin, they're trying to hit the same exact shot over and over. And the tough part about this game is every 40 yard shot, every 30 yard shot, every 70 yard shot needs a different strategy, right? And you know, we're trying to control the speed, we're trying to control the launch, and we can do that with different clubs. We can do that with maybe the same club as your skill level increases. You know, but the reality of it is, let's sort of hit on what, you know, you guys have already talked about. We need some feedback on how far are we hitting it. You know, Eric and I were lucky to have dinner with Brian Manzella at the PGA show. And he was talking about something I don't think many people realize anymore. Back in the day, he was talking about a story with who was it, Eric, that he was shagging balls for on the range? Chichi Rodriguez. Back in the 70s, he was shagging balls for Chichi Rodriguez on the range. Like, back in the day, the caddies used to literally go in the middle of the range with a baseball mitt and have players hit balls to them. So they would stand at 50 yards, 60 yards. And the goal was for the player that caddy didn't have to move, that ball was going to literally go right into their mitt. And it was kind of a funny story, because Brian was talking about how Chichi was making him run all over the place on purpose, right? And like cracking jokes to the other guys on the range. It actually was a really hilarious story. But when you think about it, you know, a lot of ranges, even if you have a nice...
Chichi was doing it on purpose, to be clear. He was not bad.
Like,
he was like, let's see how much we could make that boy run.
It was an incredible story, right? You know, and I'll see players when they go to a range, even if you have a nice practice facility, it's hard to know how far did I just hit my wedge, right? How far did it carry? And I don't see players doing enough due diligence in their practice session, like maybe pacing it out, putting a towel down and trying to hit a towel from a low flighted shot, a mid flighted shot, a high flighted shot from 60 yards. So you have feedback on how far you just carried that golf ball, and you'll be shocked at how good you can get at that, right? Those guys used to not have to move when the players were being serious. And so, and I just think to Eric's point, you know, I can make a 9-3 swing and the ball can go 20 yards, or I can make a 9-3 swing and go 100. The intent behind it, the force behind it, I think has to match. And I don't think there's any substitution for a lot of reps with a lot of detailed feedback on how far that ball carries if you want to get good at this part.
Yeah, one of the things that I say about people watching a PGA Tour range is people are often in shock at how high PGA Tour players hit their long irons and how low they hit their wedges. And if you look at averages, TrackMan puts it out, FlightScope puts one out, I think the average launch angle for driver through sand wedge covers about 11 degrees, 10 degrees sometimes, but let's say 10, it's the easier number, to 25 degrees. So literally every club in the bag fits in a 15 degree window. Most amateur golfers, they're trying to hit distance wedges and the ball's launching at 35. I've seen 40, yeah. I've seen 42 degrees with a 60, not with a pitching wedge, but we've all seen launch numbers that are really high. Okay, so distance wedges are first about control of the strike. That's very important. I often teach a distance wedge swing that's a little bit different than a full swing. On a full swing, we're trying to hit our 8-iron 155 or whatever. On a distance wedge, we might be trying to hit it 55. We want to control the strike because we want to control the spin. We want to control the launch angle. If the ball gets up in the air too much on a distance wedge, we're at the mercy of the wind. We're at the mercy of how much spin and spin degradation because the ball's in the air a little bit longer. All kinds of things can happen. If our smash factor is not the same, we're at the mercy of our ball speed. If we hit it off the toe, if we hit it off the heel, if we hit it high on the wedge, a little bit thin, we're at the mercy of a lot of ball speed changes there too. Manage your strike first. Distance wedge swings are not big swings often, unless you're John Daly and he's controlling the speed, but they're not big swings. Control your strike quality. Get your launch angle. One of the easy things to look at, if you have a launch monitor capable of measuring your vertical launch angle, or I don't know what TrackMan calls it, but the launch height.
Launch angle, yeah.
Is it called launch angle? Okay. That we want that under 30 or under.
Yep.
Generally speaking, with a pitching wedge, it's often 24. With a sand wedge, 26. With a lob wedge, 28, 29. Generally speaking. Now, that's not if you're trying to hit a super high floaty lob wedge, maybe. Maybe that gets up to 35 or something. But for a stock distance wedge, you're looking to keep that number under 30. You're looking to manage the smash factors. Again, the lowest it will generally be for a stock distance wedge is about the 1. As you get into the pitching wedge, it gets up to 1.15 or so. But you're starting to manage strike quality on the center of the face, maybe a little bit low on the face, right? Mm-hmm. Good players tend to hit the ball a half a groove or a groove lower than a lot of people think it should be hit in their own games. So what would you guys say to that? How would you practice indoors or on the golf course just strike quality and managing your launch height?
The first one would be, obviously, if you don't have a launch monitor, grab some foot spray. The amount of practice that you could put in just hitting the ball in those little short shots, like Eric said, out of the same spot over and over and over again is going to be the biggest thing for improving your overall distance control of your wedges. Because again,
and if you're going to do foot spray with a wedge, do it off a mat, because if you do it off the divot will wipe away all the foot spray.
Yeah, especially if there's any dew on the ground. Yeah, you're toast there. But yeah, for the most part, just start with that. If you can hone that in, you know, 5-10 balls every beginning of every distance control wedge session, you're going to be in a good spot, because then it's like, all right, that's what that feels like. There's middle of face contact. And then from there, go into Tyson's thing where, yeah, if you don't want to send your buddy out there with a baseball mat and hopefully just get hit by someone shanking a ball beside you, you could just step it off or take your laser rangefinder and find like a, you know, dark colored spot out on the driving range. Laser that out. Oh, it's at 60. It's at 65. Okay, perfect. Have your balls land into that.
Well, hold on. Be careful there. Distance wedges on the range.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Tell my players not to do it, because range balls, you have to have really good range balls, right?
Yeah. I'm lucky. Our range has good balls. My bad.
Yeah, I recommend that people go out to the golf course in the evening and just put their bag down somewhere, hit a bunch of balls one direction, and then step off where they landed and laser back to the golf bag that's sitting in the fairway. You can do this if you're at a course where there's not much play in the early evenings and things like that. You can go to this third hole or something and, you know, just have a half an hour to just hit balls back and forth in the fairway. Don't do it on the green because you're making a lot of pitch marks, but you can do that on the fairway. Don't do distance wedge work at the range if the range balls are not like really premium balls.
And Eric, I think it's a good point, right? But tell the listeners, like, what if the range balls aren't good, how will that affect that shot?
They're going to spin less and they're going to launch higher.
Yeah, that's right.
They'll launch ridiculously high, some of them. It's like, don't even work on your mechanics of your wedge swing, because unless you're really focused on not giving a crap about the flight of the actual ball, because range balls, they don't spin much and they launch super high because they're hard, they're durable, they're supposed to last for a long time. They just roll up the face and come off really high.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, so if, like Eric said, you don't have good range balls, I mean, again, it depends on where you're practicing. If you can get to like the end side of the range and if you're comfortable, right, I don't want you to injure yourself, but you could hit like little 30 yards, right, and then go snag them, hit them into like the screen beside you, like just short of the driveway. Just find a spot that you can practice at. If you can find it on the golf course, yeah, of course, that's even better. It's safer than on the driving range. Don't get yourself injured. But strikes first, then from there, then can you vary the speed that you need to be able to bring into a good centered strike.
Yeah, and I'll tell guys, I mean, listen, this is a little bit of a specialty shot, right? And we're not doing the same thing with this golf swing that we're doing with an 8-iron or, you know, a driver. You know, our setup is going to be a little bit different. You know, we're probably not going to want a bunch of weight shift, right? And, you know, we might try to be steeper than a normal shot and not worry about shallowing the club as much as we would with a longer golf swing. So it is a little bit of a specialty shot. And again, I think really good short game players, either A, they just have a really, really good touch and feel. I would say it's always been sort of one of the strengths for me. But also, if let's say that you don't have great touch and feel, you can still be a great short game player, but it's going to take a lot of reps and a lot of calibration to one of Jason's points earlier, like you got to calibrate this stuff and you got to hit a lot of shots, and you can't just show up to the range and pound a full bucket of drivers and think that your short game is going to be good, right? And so love all those things. I think it's a great question, and I think the average golfer is always trying to find a system that can just create your control of the golf ball, and I don't know that there is a system that is just going to do that for you. You gotta earn that, if you will.
Yeah, and there are some other little things. Once you find what works for you, you can grip up and down half an inch or an inch if you want to take off 5 yards from your stock yardage. You can go a little bit past if you're a clock system person. You can go, okay, I'm going to go to there and then a little bit more. You can do those kinds of things. You can move it ball back in your stance a little bit to make the ball come out a little bit faster.
Yep.
I think one of the last things I want to say is when Sasha McKenzie added the distance wedge stuff to the stack system, now it's a radar, so it measures club speed but it measures ball speed. They found that inside of 150 yards, which is going to cover everyone's distance wedge distances, he found that ball speed was, assuming a decent strike, assuming you don't blade it or chunk it, ball speed was 98% predictor for the distance the ball went. Assuming, again, a decent ball and a decent strike. Because if you do hit it too high and your launch angle is too high and it comes off at 35 degrees, your ball speed's not going to be very high because... So even if you miss strike it a little bit or haven't got quite tour level like or very good player launch conditions, ball speed is still like a 98% predictor for the distance it's going to go. So you can practice your wedge, distance wedge swing off to the side of the driving range if there's a strip of fairway over there where you can hit balls into a net. That way you can hit your golf balls into a net, as long as you have a radar that will measure the ball speed and give you a distance number.
And real quick, would you guys agree elite players can control the speed to a mile and a half an hour pretty predictably, right? Not obviously every single time, but they're really good at controlling that number.
Perfect.
I watched a video with Scottie Scheffler where he was saying, I think it might have been ball speed, but it might have been a carry yardage. And he was within like half a yard or half a mile an hour.
It's unbelievable.
On everyone, and several he like nailed to the 10.
Yeah, they're very good.
And you have to train that with feedback, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Jason, where can people find us?
You can find us on all social medias at The Spin Axis. And you can find us online at thespinaxis.com.
Thanks for listening.